This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, welcome to Breaking Bread. This is the show where we explore food through culture, conversations, and a whole lot of curiosity. I'm your host, Lo Yijun, a food writer and recipe developer from the Jun and Tonic blog. Today, we are going to be talking about snacks. If you've been listening to this show long enough, you'll know that on Breaking Bread, there's only one real snack. Me. I promise I'm not usually this self-aggrandizing, but for today, I'll relinquish my title because we'll be talking to one of the coolest snack makers in Malaysia and Southeast Asia and kind of the world, really. Amazing Grace. If you've walked through your local grocers recently, chances are you have spotted rows of Amazing Grace nuts, granolas, and nut butters on the shelves if they're not already snapped up by their loyal customer base. Even if you don't live in Malaysia, you might have heard of them because since the birth of their company in 2015, they've expanded to countries like Singapore, Hong Kong, Australia, and even the UK. So today, we'll talk to one of the co-founders of Amazing Grace, Amy Zheng, and learn more about what makes their snack look and taste like such, well, snacks. So, welcome onto the show today.
Thank you, June. Thanks for having me.
So, I know you did an interview with BFM a couple of years ago, but for those who maybe haven't heard of your brand, can you give us like a tight story of how you first started?
Sure. So Amazing Grace stands for, I guess, as June introduced, the world's best snacks. They're good for you, they taste delicious, and they remind you of something that you always love. Amazing Grace started 4 years ago in our home kitchen. We were three young women. I came from a consulting background, so I was working in management consulting, jet setting, working crazy hours. And my business partner, Ching and Sabrina, Ching came from a very artistic background, as well as a catering background, as well as a fashion background. So she's done a lot in her past. And Sabrina came from a printing family. So since young, her story has always been she never went on holidays. Her parents always made her work in the printing factory. So she's been trained to own her own business from a very young age. So she is our operational guru.
The three of you, when you came together, obviously you have such different skill sets. So then how come a snack company was what you guys decided on?
Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, we don't come from, I guess, an F&B industry strictly. And the beginning of it was prompted by us just talking about, you know, how important being healthy and eating healthy was and how hard it is to find healthier options on the shelves. And we walked through, I remember walking through the aisle and looking at what was available. And it was mostly products from US, Australia, UK, and probably somewhere far. And what we noticed was that it was either very expensive or it wasn't very interesting. And so we thought, wait a minute, no one's actually making this for the local community here. People just, it was a trading business. People just bought it from overseas, put on the shelf and hoped someone would buy it. There was no real, I guess, sense of educating the market or really try to think about what, I guess, Malaysians or Singaporeans or Asians wanted to eat and then making something that's really suitable for them and making sure that it's fresh as well. Because remember, a lot of the stuff that comes here has spent months on the sea and in someone's warehouse. So you're not getting the best thing. So we're always getting, I guess, sort of leftovers from bigger markets. So that's what prompted us. We said, look, we can probably make this. And so we did. We started coming up with recipes. We wanted to use things like pandan, curry leaves, gula melaka, things that, you know, we were all familiar with but weren't really integrated in the daily snacking habits. And I mean, lo and behold, it actually worked really well. We held our first market about 4 months into the business. I think it was very much like, look, we're either gonna, it's not gonna work. If it does, then, you know, we'll find out. We very quickly baked something in the morning. Actually, we baked all day. We dragged hundreds of bottles of finished products to Bangsar Shopping Centre. And then we set up shop. Me being the ex-consultant and my partner is also doing what they did. We never had to actually sell things to, you know, in the marketplace. And I don't think my parents would have been very proud of me at that moment to say, okay, we've educated you, you know, through many, many years of schooling and now you want to go to a pasar and sell something granola. So that was the beginning of Amazing Grace.
I mean, I first heard of your brand, your granolas. I first had them like 3-4 years ago, basically when around the time when you started, right? And I feel that, yeah, it was really something that was quite different from what you could get out there in your supermarkets or local grocers. How did you try and infuse the Malaysian flavors in there and how was the response from Malaysians?
Yeah, so integrating it took a bit of try and error. Again, none of us had, you know, a French baking course ever, but we tried. We had a really big oven available to us, which was very helpful. And we looked up online on recipes about how to make really fun snacks and cereals, and then we just started like putting in our own ingredients like gula melaka or, you know, making our own kaya or using combination of pandan, lemongrass, curry. So I guess it wasn't a rocket science at all. It was just more of sitting down and go, what do you eat normally? And what do you eat? Or what do you think Malaysians will like? And let's try to get these ingredients and let's integrate it. I think what was probably advantageous for us was that none of our competitors who were mostly based overseas had access to these ingredients. So they probably didn't know what pandan was or what gula melaka was, right? Now gula melaka is all the rage, especially with your tiger sugar bubble teas and everything. But a few years ago, it wasn't obvious that you can use these ingredients in a seemingly Western or a unaffiliated ingredient group.
I want to just ask like a cooking technique question because I've tried making granolas at home.
Yes.
Quite a few times, but it's never it never comes out super crispy like the ones that you get in like yours, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is the secret to like a crunchy granola that still keeps its texture when you put it with milk?
Yeah. No, that's a really good point. You know, if you look at someone making granola, it will look like super easy and most obvious.
Because basically you just like mix the nuts and then put it in the oven, right?
Right. You mix your ingredients. I think with any technique, it's just about kind of mastering each step of the process. So with making a really good granola, you really have to control the humidity around you. Malaysia or Southeast Asia is highly humid. It's the number one enemy to any baking, actually. So you want to make sure your ingredients or your finished product or, you know, whatever you've baked does not stay out for a very long time. It's also about getting the combination of your wet and dry ingredients and the ratio of that well. It's about the temperature in which you bake your ingredients. It's about how long you let it to cool. And it's about how fast you can pack it.
So it sounds like a lot of experimentation there.
It's a lot of experimentation. I mean, obviously anyone can make their own granola. But the thing is, once you go from a small home cooking to a much bigger batch production, you really, everything changes. And the importance of controlling every step of the process is massive. So yeah, so that was a big learning from us. And I think one of the things that we experienced as we grew from a home baker to a small shop baker to now a larger facility, certified, halal certified, HACCP certified journey is to understand, wow, it's very different from baking this at home.
I think you saying a larger production facility is sort of an understatement because you're now, you've gone international, right? With your products because you're now shipping to countries overseas and you're even like tackled the Singaporean market and Hong Kong. What are some of the biggest differences you've seen in the snacking or eating culture between those markets?
So I think Malaysian snacking habits versus, let's say, Singapore or Hong Kong or even further out, is really the flavors. that people affiliate to. I think Malaysia and Singapore is still very similar in the flavors that click. But we also do notice subtle differences in, say, Singaporeans tend to be more excited about our spicy mala nut mix than Malaysians are for some reason. And you know, the time of the day that they want to have a snack or how much they eat. But I think once you even get to Hong Kong, it immediately changes. Like, no one knows what Gula Melaka is. So they're kind of like, oh, that's really weird. And when we went to China, we found that Chinese consumers don't really like chocolate. Whereas chocolate is a really big hit in Malaysia, right? If you have a chocolate, anything, people got a bit crazy here.
No, I'm a chocolate fiend for myself as well.
Good, yeah. So, on the minute you bring chocolate to China, they're like, do you have something fruity? Do you have lychee? Do you have... So our orange flavor tends to do a lot better in China. And then we're obviously in the Philippines now. We're in Brunei. And Philippines also, they will taste the... we have a tom yum flavor. They really don't like that, right? Mm. So they want things to be much sweeter. And more, I guess, Western because of the history of Philippines as well. So they tend to like more creamy flavors. And so we definitely see differences between countries.
Mm. So then for markets that are like further from your hub here in Malaysia, do you then try to cater to those markets or you try to push for, let's say, like Gula Melaka in Hong Kong, although they're not really that familiar with it? Do you then try and market it to them like, hey, try this, it's actually really, really good and it's one of the special ingredients that we use here in Malaysia? Is that something that you actively push for?
So the example of the Gula Melaka, because we have a salted Gula Melaka granola.
Yeah.
Actually, when we introduced it to Hong Kong, we actually called it coconut sugar or coconut, granola or something
Right.
So that they don't see the word and be confused, but mm-hmm. we're actually interpreting it for them. And once you do, it actually is quite fun for them because they're like, okay, I get it. Had it.
Something different.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think absolutely you need to educate a new market if it's something that they've never seen before. But like the case of, let's say, China, you can't force them to like chocolate if they don't like it. they just naturally don't wake up thinking, I really want a chocolate croissant or something like that. You know, they think about, I want a red bean soup. So you do have to localize. And I think that's very much in our plan going forward, is to really create pockets of local snacking gurus who can cater our snacks to the local population. And it's also about trying to not travel very far, like making sure products are made freshly where your consumers are, trying to understand what their eating habits are. We are also very cognizant that this is a generation of young people, especially young people from Asia, who are thinking very differently about Asian products. And I think it's very good right at the moment where we're recognizing that Asian products can be quality products as well, and not just, you know, oh, Malaysia, oh, it's an OEM country, we make things for other countries, right? There's no sense of, yeah, Malaysian products are fantastic, we should definitely get something from Malaysia. So I think that's the perception we're trying to change.
Yeah.
And we are seeing that.
Yeah, and I think I would say, yeah, you're really successful at that because on your website, you brand yourself as a quote-unquote Asian purveyor of fun, yummy, and healthy snacks. And I think your brand, the kinds of products that you put out really adhere to that spirit that you have there.
Thank you.
But just now you also mentioned one of your latest flavors, your spicy mala, which we have right in front of us. And it's been very tempting not to just grab at it and open it. But we're going to hold off for just a bit because we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, we'll learn more about Amazing Grace and eat some spicy mala snacks. Stay with us. You're listening to Breaking Bread on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Breaking Bread. I'm Jun and I've been speaking to Amy Zheng from Amazing Grace, one of my favorite Asian snack companies. So you brought with you a bunch of your products, and one of which is the spicy mala nut mix that you recently released. Shall we try some?
Yes. So you should try the normal version. So we have two versions. One is the standard spicy mala nut mix. So we are actually working with a chef from the Hilton Hotel, actually, to come up with a unique spicy mala mix that has no MSG. So we have to adhere to our healthy snacking standards, and MSG is not one of them. So it was very, very difficult to find one of that.
Okay, I'm going to
yes.
I'm gonna eat it. I feel the heat. Slowly.
Yep.
Ooh, it's almost like a slow burn.
Yes. That is the signature of the mala. Yes. You feel it a lot after you fully chewed. Yes.
Yeah, I'm feeling it a lot in my throat. Wow.
Yep.
And it's really addictive.
Great.
But this is just the regular spiciness, right? Because you also have a 2x?
We have a 2x.
Spiciness?
Yes. For those who are ambitious and are... love spice. We have a spice challenge for them. So you can't actually get the 2x on its own. You have to get the normal, standard, classic version, and then you can purchase the 2x.
Oh, and then you're sort of like qualified.
You're qualified
to go for
to,
the
to go for the 2x.
Okay, exactly. since I've already tried the regular,
absolutely.
Should I go for the 2x?
You're very qualified to do that.
I'm not that great with spiciness though.
Okay.
But I quite like the mala flavor. Yeah.
Good.
Okay, I hope I can still continue talking after this. But
okay.
For the sake of the show, I'll eat
I can
this.
Get you some water. Yeah, even the color is a lot more
yeah,
red.
Yeah, it's darker, right?
It's darker. It's a lot more reddish.
Almost it's like a evil
yes,
aroma
staring at you.
Yeah. Okay. I'm feeling it. Oh, I'm feeling a sweat.
Oh, you are. I can smell it, actually, from the mala spice is coming over here.
It's radiating from the packet.
Yes, you are turning a little red.
Okay, I think I'll stick with the regular spicy, but
okay,
it is still quite addictive.
Look, there's a Ziploc. You're not meant to have the whole thing in
okay.
one go, but each to their own. If you want something to counterbalance, you could have one of our best sellers, which is a sweeter nut mix or a chocolate granola.
Okay, let's go granola.
You want to do granola? Okay. There we go. So this is the hazelnut black forest. So this is one of the first recipes we've ever come up with. And it remains to be one of our most popular granolas, especially in Malaysia.
Okay, I need some
counterbalance
to temper
yes.
the heat.
So what's special about this is that it's a dark chocolate granola and with a hint of hazelnut. It is very nutrient dense. So there's buckwheat, there's chia seeds, red cherries, cranberries. So I think that's what makes it really unique because people are like, it feels like I'm having a Nutella ish.
Oh my God,
granola.
Why have I not bought this before? It's so good.
Yeah, it doubles down as a chocolate cookie.
Yeah.
But healthier.
And you can just eat it like that as a snack as well, right?
Absolutely. Mm. So you brought up a really good point is we were one of the first companies to make granola more snackable. You know, the definition of the granola that you see in the supermarket is usually, you know, you have to pour it with milk or yogurt. No one has really advocated for granola to be a snack. And so when we started baking this, we started making it a little bit chunkier, a little bit more friendly for the person who's working in front of their desk, for a person who's traveling, for a person who's giving it to their kid to shut them up. So this is a really versatile snack and on top of being a breakfast.
Mm. Has there been any other flavors that you're currently experimenting with that might come out soon?
Absolutely. So we're experimenting for Christmas a product called the Chocolate Fudge Bites. For the last 2 years, we've been rolling out a fudge bite, but we always twist the flavor a little bit. So this year, it's going to be peanut butter.
Mm.
So it's a peanut butter chocolate fudge bites. It's using very similar ingredients to like our granola. So it's oats, it has cocoa. But we made it in a way that looks like really small chunks of fudgy squares. So that's something new that people can look forward to this Christmas. We're also trying our flavors like red bean granola, seaweed granola. I dared my team to make a durian granola, you know, salted egg nut mix, but someone will get a heart attack, so we decided not to.
Oh my God. So when you experiment with all these products, is Malaysia the first like testing ground where you push your products out?
Absolutely. Mm. So being small and being nimble, we're able to come up with a new product within a month of initial kind of discussion or experimentation. Malaysia's such a great place to try new things. And the partners, the retail partners that we work with are usually very happy for us to roll it out, test it out, do some sampling and get people to tell us exactly what they think about it.
Yeah, I was going to say as well, like, I feel like Malaysian eaters, would you say we're pretty adventurous out there? So the kind of feedback that you get from your Malaysian customers are really useful to your product development and tweaking certain things. Has it been helpful?
Yeah, I mean, we always joke that if you can make a food company work in Malaysia, you can make it work anywhere.
Mm. Has it been true?
Has that been true? Okay, so an anecdote is we do have, I guess, customers from the UK or Australia who tend to say our products are pretty strong in flavor because they don't have such strong flavors in their culture. So for them, tasting something with that much flavor is quite different. It's not to say they don't like it, but it does take some used to. So it's the same, right? Like we love our nasi lemak, we like our char kway teow, and they are all very, very flavorful. And so I think, you know, there's just something that is unique to the local culture. And I guess we are bringing it out to the rest of the world and say, this is another option. This is something different.
Mm. And I just want to talk about how the small businesses in the F&B industry in Malaysia, there doesn't seem to be that many of them that have gone international. Your company is one of the few that I know of, but it seems like our neighbours in Singapore and Thailand, like, you know, like Irvin's salted egg chips, and then there's a new one, Aroma, the black truffle chips I tried recently. So it seems like all these companies are getting more recognition out there than Malaysian small food businesses. Like, do you think, why do you think that is? And do you have any advice? Hopes perhaps? Yeah.
Yeah. So yes, Thailand definitely has a very active snacking or just small food businesses.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's because a lot of the ingredients are locally sourced. So, you know, we always talk about the fact that yes, Malaysia has very fertile land, but most of the land is dedicated to growing palm oil. And so we don't end up getting a ready supply of pineapple or nuts or fruits and things that can really inspire local entrepreneurs to make something out of it and do something different. So that, I think that's one. Two is, I actually don't think Singapore is a very great place to be a food entrepreneur because it's just so expensive to do business there. I know when we started, we had a lot of granola company, a lot of nuts companies as well that started around the same time in Singapore. And it's been very, very difficult for them to expand.
Right.
I think the salted chips guy did well because I guess salted egg is just such a popular thing for Singaporeans and then like for a lot of Southeast Asians as well. But again, like salted egg isn't going to be very successful, let's say in a place like UK or Australia where they find salted egg to be really, really weird. I think taking a step back, I think what we need to see in Malaysia is examples of, you know, successful FMCGs or F&B companies that have gone overseas and then to inspire local entrepreneurs to then take up risks and follow forth. What prohibits this is Malaysia has so many small F&B or roadside hawker entrepreneurs, like these people who make this at home, they'll sell us somewhere during the day and they're quite happy and satisfied with what they've done. So I think we have a lot of that. And I think just the risk sentiment for taking that further isn't very high. at the moment. So I guess it's now up to the younger generation to go, okay, I'm not quite satisfied with the, you know, day in summer nasi lemak and then come back. I'm going to make the ultimate nasi lemak that can be frozen or reheated or something and travel to the rest of the world as a typical Malaysian dish or snack. So I think it's to really encourage younger entrepreneurs to have the risk appetite because the talent is here, the food is here. We make amazing food here.
I think your company is one of the few companies out there that people really look up to in terms of the level of success and growth that you've had. Because just in 4 quick years, you've grown to such a sizable business. And yeah, it's been really impressive to see. But in the upcoming years, what plans or long-term goals do you have for Amazing Grace?
So I think every year has just gotten more and more exciting, but at the same time, more and more scary at this year together, because you just have a lot more responsibilities. And we made a decision very early on that we wanted to make something significant out of this. I mean, size is one thing, but it's going to have a great impact. It's going to make us happy. It's going to make our team happy and then our customers happy. So I think the philosophy is to maintain the innovation, maintain the sense of excitement and joy from eating high quality, yummy snacks that are actually good for you and replicating it in more and more countries. So for example, I mean, we look at Philippines, we look at Indonesia, Vietnam, China even. And we're just seeing an emergence of a very small but growing group of usually younger people who are saying, I don't want to eat what my parents eat anymore. This stuff is no good for me. Or, this stuff isn't going to help me do what I want to do today because our life is so demanding. Mm. You know, we need to be traveling or working 12 hours, or I'm going to be a mom or a dad, or I'm working and, you know, playing sports or volunteering on the weekend. So that's a very different lifestyle than what our parents probably had. So they're calling out for something different. The young people today are saying, I want something different. So we really want to be that company that can go to different communities, especially in Asia, because we're so proud to be Asians, to cater to that need. Of these people who are saying, hey, I want something that actually makes me stronger, helps me focus, and I don't want to be always thinking about food because I'm hungry all the time. So that's the need that we want to fulfill.
You just mentioned something that I feel is really interesting, because you were saying how a lot of younger Asians with me feeling like, oh, we kind of want to move away from the food that our parents have been having and find healthier alternatives. But it always seems like these healthier alternatives seem to come from the West, right? Mm-hmm. And I think what you're doing is quite important, is sort of combining the two, although you're taking foods that are more popular in the West or created by the West, like granolas or like all these nut butters, yeah. But you're infusing a certain sense of Asianness.
Local pride, absolutely.
Yeah, into it.
Yeah.
And I think it's really, really important for any, I guess, food businesses, small food businesses out there. I'm sure maybe you feel the same, probably. I would like to see them try to incorporate or like combine the two, right?
Absolutely. I think it's very important to look at where the local market is at the moment. Mm. And I always say this story that, you know, I think a lot of the young people today, they're in a spectrum of health. No, you know, you have a very small portion of people who are like super healthy every day. And, but most people are somewhere in between. They'll eat something not so healthy, and then they'll eat something healthy to compensate for it. And then at night, they might eat something more unhealthy or have a drink or something like that. And then the next day, they feel really guilty, so they have something healthy. And everyone's under so much pressure to do well or to perform or whatever it is that, you know, food is an outlet for people to express themselves, to realize their aspirations, to realize their dreams. And so you just got to meet people where they are. Like when I was in Australia, people will be like, okay, this is really healthy. It tastes like nothing, but that's okay because it's healthy. the typical young or Malaysian person or Singaporean would never say that. They will go, this has no taste. I don't care how healthy it is for me. I'm not eating it. And so we just got to have to go, this is the reality of our community, and we will come up with something that suits their lifestyle and their aspirations. Mm. So it's not even about making sure everything has an Asian flavor, but it's about making something that your consumers really need at the moment. So that's really my advice for all the F&B entrepreneurs and operators out there. Make something that really suits your local market.
Mm, wise words. Thanks so much for coming onto the show this week.
Thanks for having me. It's been really fun.
That's all we have for this week's show. To listen to more episodes, find us on iTunes, Spotify, or visit our website at www.bfm.my. And if you're hungry for recipes to try out this weekend or want to read some funky food writing, you can find those on my blog at junandtonic.com. That's junandtonic.com. I'm Jun, and you've been listening to Breaking Bread on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.